Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a Gun. A Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much once again for listening. I'm going to just say this up top, as I always do, but with a little bit more anger. Please give us 5 stars in a review on iTunes. I feel like y'all have fallen off on that. I feel like you guys are like,
we have 5 more episodes of this show. What are they going
to
do?
I know, but I really would like to end this show with a more review. I want 1,000. I want 1,000.
You are not going to change the algorithm. The algorithm has moved on without you people, and we accept that about you.
I mean, but this, you know, this show is evergreen. At any point that you could pick it up and listen to it, and I would like that to happen. So go on to the store. Actually, I also noticed this other thing. If you go onto the Apple, like iTunes podcast store, it'll show you, like, it'll recommend podcasts that your friends texted to you.
Really? So,
Yeah. It was like from Vince, and then it was like some, you know, weird podcast that is probably sucks. And well, you have bad taste.
Recommend the Pod Yourself a Gun to all your pals out there.
Just start texting Pod Yourself a Gun to your friends and force them to listen to it, because it'll remind them. Anyways, those are, you know, just up top of some announcements for you. I'd really like you to help us out. We're almost done with this. Come on. You can do it. 5 stars in review. Okay. Today, Vince and I, and a guest, are going to be talking about from season 6B, episode 3 of The Sopranos, Remember When. And our guest today is a returning...
Oh.
What?
I was going to set you up. I was going to say, who's our guest today, Matt?
Oh, that's good.
I am. I am a
fuck. Are we going? No. Our guest today is a returning champion of Pod Yourself a Gun. He is a writer and a podcaster. Ladies and gentlemen, Dave Schilling is back on the pod.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the completely mangled introduction. I feel respected.
That was on you guys. I was doing a great job. I didn't need anyone to tee me off the way Vince tried to do. And then you came in too early.
You were stumble bumbling around here. Who's the guy we got? What's the word? Is a G word for a person who comes into your house or on a podcast and they're not regular? They're just like a guest? Guest.
A friend. Listen, it's a friend and a guest. And I think after 1,000 episodes of this podcast.
1,000?
I think there's been 1,000. It feels like there's been 1,000. I can safely say that people just skip the intro. So,
yeah, why don't we skip the intro then?
We marined it up.
Yeah, we are, you know, this is our version of just talking about our cat or whatever Mark Maron does. Does he still do that?
I don't listen to that show.
Yeah, neither do I. There was a time where I did, though.
Yeah, a lot of people used to. Sure, people still listen to it, but, you know, I don't need to hear him wax poetic about the Comedy Store again.
Yeah.
We know after who everybody's while, guys like... are now.
Yeah. He's got new guys.
There can't be any more guys. That's the problem. Like, I don't want to hear who's guy anymore. We're stocked up on guys.
The guys are Louis C.K., Bill Cosby, and...
Crystalia.
Oh, Richard Jenny's great.
I feel like Richard Jenny did nothing wrong. And yet, the only one out of those you named who committed suicide. Anyways, do you...
Shockingly.
Speaking of tragedy, do you like The Sopranos?
I do, yeah. I answered this question the first time I was on, yes.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. You still like it.
I love The Sopranos. It's great. There's a lot of great episodes of The Sopranos. I'm not sure if the one we're talking about today is one of them. But you know what? We'll get to it.
We'll get to it. All right. That's fair. Sometimes you like it. Sometimes you don't. Now, you yourself like The Sopranos.
Sure.
Well, that's been our interview for today. I think...
Great job, Matt. I always say how much this segment is a good idea and you should keep doing it.
Speaking of the segment ending, we cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song. Pod. 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 Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. All right, ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, today, once again, we're going to be talking about from season 6B of The Sopranos, episode 3, Remember When, which premiered on April 22nd, 2007. Vince, break us off a little piece of that synopsis.
While forced to lay low in Miami, Tony begins to question Paulie's loyalty. Junior and Phil Leotardo make moves to gain power in their respective territories.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. Those
That's what happens.
That is true. That is true. One is in New York, the other is in some sort of prison mental institution. But what was happening at the time, Vince, that this episode premiered?
Oh, yeah, Matt. I think what you're trying to say is that, you know, when you're evaluating art, you must take it in the context in which it was produced.
Yes.
Right? Something like that. We got to add some of that context back in. So we're going to go all the way back to April 15th, 2007, tax day, in the Remember When... Hey.
Hey, too long.
Remember when is the lowest form of conversation.
Hey, that's the episode.
Sure.
We finally...
I'm taking too long. All right.
We both take too long.
Yeah.
I'm just saying we both, but this is the episode with the, forget it.
Yeah. A few things happening. It was Jackie Robinson Day. That is the 60th anniversary, I think, of when he joined the major leagues, 1947, April 15th, 2007, if I did the math right.
On tax day.
Yeah, on tax day. Other things that were happening, there was some anti-Putin protesters getting beaten by police in Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this didn't happen today?
No.
This happened in the past?
Believe it or not.
They've been protesting this guy for decades now. Yeah. Boy.
Hundreds were detained, including the organizer, Garry Kasparov, after defying authorities to hold a protest march. That is the chess guy. And he believes in some kooky theory where the Middle Ages didn't happen. I don't know why
they didn't. What do you mean?
Yeah, he doesn't believe that the Middle Ages happened. That there was like that.
What are the Middle Ages?
That we added like 600 years of history or something.
Oh man, he just like we fast forwarded through that part.
Yeah, it's a mistake to count them. They didn't happen. I don't remember. Right. I don't remember
so
his whole deal.
It's kind of like the Will and Grace reboot is what you're saying.
Yeah.
We just tacked some extra stuff on and ignored the rest.
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't think I agree with that.
Yeah. It's what if and just like that was the whole show. There was never a Samantha and there was always a Che Diaz.
Exactly. And Che Diaz was there all along. Other things.
I'm bisexual. I'm sorry. What a good joke.
Right. Iran announces plans for 2 new nuclear power reactors.
Okay, this is from the past?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, it's almost like history repeats itself.
Yeah, time is a flat circle. When it comes to American foreign policy in Iran, it's been the same story every year for the last 30 plus years. Is just like, Iran's about to do it. They're gonna make a nuke. You watch. And it's like, I don't think so. I keep reading this story and they keep not making a nuke. And meanwhile, North Korea is like, yeah, we've been had a nuke every time. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying.
You know, we always keep that motherfucking thing on us.
Yeah. God. Stay packing heat over in North Korea.
I mean, if the theme of today's Remember When machine is like, is this really the past? I got a perfect story. Like, this is another one that feels like it could have been written yesterday. This is from the New York Post. And it's entitled The 9 Hottest Celebs on the Web. So these are these are the hottest web celebrities of 2007.
Web labs.
Yeah.
Number
who's
one.
Who's getting wanked on?
So number 2007. One. Wait, can I guess? Let me guess.
Okay.
It's 2007. Andy Samberg.
No.
Andy Serkis.
No.
I feel Heather I Deep Throat.
I feel fairly confident that at most you may get one of these, but most likely zero.
It was is Heather I Deep Throat on there?
No, sadly. I do remember her.
Ian Falco.
No. Number one.
Jenna Marbles.
Tila Tequila.
Of course, yeah.
Online pinup turned pop diva.
Yeah. I'm bisexual.
In between personally coordinating her hyper-popular MySpace page, at last count, she had 1.79 million friends, and posting daily video and text to blogs, MySpace superstar and burgeoning pop sensation Tila Tequila has become a triple threat.
Oh, fuck. She's now a quadruple threat, in though she added anti-Semitism to...
And flat. She's a flat earth Satanist anti-Semite. It's she's got a...
She's got that's like four threats added to the singing and dancing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, she's gonna be a senator soon enough.
Yeah, I know, she's getting close. Wow.
Number two, Trent Venegas, the next big gossip blogger.
No idea.
Venegas. I mean, that sounds dirty.
Yeah, it does.
Trent Venegas, 32, Venegas probably, a school teacher from Detroit, started his celebrity-obsessed website, Pink is the New Blog, in 2004 as an exercise in writing daily. Today, the site, which is like a kinder, gentler version of Perez Hilton's snarky blog, attracts more than 200,000 unique hits daily.
Okay, well, let me guess another one. That Spoon Fingers cartoon, is he in there?
Fingers. This one, number three.
Like spoons?
Okay. This is apparently a person known as Secondhand Serenade. After 8 years of playing bass guitar with various West Coast bands, John Vasili picked up an acoustic guitar, scraped together just enough money to pay for 8 days of studio time, and recorded a 10-track album called Awake in the summer of 2005.
A few short months
after uploading his tracks on a MySpace account, Vasili, who goes by the stage name Secondhand Serenade, became the number one unsigned band on the site.
I feel like we started this podcast at the wrong time. We should have started because imagine how popular my Sopranos parody songs would be in 2007 America.
Yeah, but you couldn't have thought of them then. There wasn't enough cultural context.
That's true.
Yeah, so then these next four are all going to be household names by now. Number four, Job for a Cowboy. SpongeBob video propels band into big time.
Okay.
You don't remember the song Knee Deep as a soundtrack to a spoof SpongeBob SquarePants video clip on YouTube?
God fucking damn. I'm telling you, I would have been huge. I would have been huge. Yeah. It sucks.
But you and Chocolate Rain.
I feel like you're going to know this next one, though. You might not have known the last one. All right, number five, Cobra Snake.
I remember Cobra Snake.
Net-centric shooter turns paparazzo.
No, I don't know Cobra Snake.
He took a lot of like party photos, and he had like a secondhand store in Hollywood. He hung out with a lot of teenagers, which was kind of weird.
I'm sure that's normal, and everything turned out good with him.
His gritty, candid shots feature celebs like Paris Hilton, Jarvis Cocker, and Johnny Knoxville. Hunter has even cultivated the power to make and break fringe celebs. His former intern, the street urchin-esque 17-year-old Corey Kennedy, achieved brief fashion fame, a roster of celebrity friends like Lindsay Lohan, a dedicated cool kid following, and modeling gigs after being photographed by Hunter at parties in LA.
Yeah, I remember this very well.
I want an example of when he destroyed a celebrity, though.
Oh, he took me down.
He
single-handedly prevented me from ever being a model.
That's how you ended up on Pod Yourself a Gun? Is that what happened?
Yeah. I had to become, a normal person.
Yeah, podcaster writer.
It's a long way down. Number six, Forbidden. California girl is model netizen. With 1.3 million friends on MySpace, 24-year-old Christine Dolce, a.k.a. Forbidden, has been called a baby Pam Anderson. She's graced the cover of Playboy, posed for Stuff and FHM, appeared in Vanity Fair, and on The Tyra Banks Show. No small feat for a Long Beach, California girl who started out as a makeup artist after high school.
Honestly, at this point, I'm like, why is Heather I Deep Throat not on this? Because her videos are still relevant to this day.
That's right.
Christine Dolce is now a cosmetologist or whatever it is. She's just like, oh, no. Oh, guys, hold on. Let me rewind that. Uh-oh. She is dead.
Oh, no.
She died. I don't know why I'm laughing. It's not funny. Her liver failed, guys.
No, that's not good. It's not
sad.
That's very sad, but it was just
your presentation. Back in 2007, I would have thought, I looked at her and I thought, this girl's liver is going to last forever. That's what I thought back then.
She was an alcoholic.
Apparently.
Oh, that's
anyway.
Too bad.
Well, that's a shame.
Yeah, bummer.
Number 7, Brooke Parkhurst. Everybody knows her, right? A self-described aging debutante, small-town girl cursed with big-city aspirations, Brooke Parkhurst documented her social climbing ways in her blog, Belle in the Big Apple. Apparently, this is the original Emily in Paris.
Oh.
She got a book deal. Great job.
How many more are there?
There's 2 more. Sorry. I'm fascinated by these because this is really like 2007.
She seems to be doing well. She's still writing. Good for her.
Oh, that's
good.
Okay.
Not dead.
Not dead is, that's great. That's huge.
Step up, yeah.
Number 8, Amanda Congdon. At the tender age of 26, Northwestern grad Congdon is already the co-producer and host of a weekly video cast for ABC and is developing a TV show for HBO.
Well,
that didn't
maybe
come
it
out.
Happened.
It sure did.
You know.
She hosted and produced the popular video blog Rocket Boom. That we all remember.
Yeah, we love Rocket Boom.
To the last one, you guys. We made it. Number 9, Brian Boy.
What?
Style site turns fab Filipino into fashion muse. Movies, Disturbia, Blades of Glory, Meet the Robinsons, Perfect Stranger, Are We Done Yet? Songs, same as last week. Pop song, top pop song in the country was Give It to Me by Timbaland featuring Nelly Furtado and Justin Timberlake.
Hell yeah.
And the top rock song was, of course, Breath by Breaking Benjamin.
Still!
Yeah.
Wow, classic.
Jesus Christ,
who doesn't
that song
still bop to that one?
We all bop. That is forever slaps. So that's what was going on at the time that this episode came out. Like Vince said, you know, the synopsis of this on IMDb is, I mean, it's a little thin. Fucking Tony is questioning Paulie's loyalty, and Junior and Phil Leotardo are both making moves to gain power in their respective territories. Blah, blah, blah. But I have my own version.
Oh, do
as you?
You
know. Yeah. It is not at all auto-tuned. So, enjoy.
I am wide awake, 'cause Paulie is giggling, sitting all alone and beaming, laughing at Three's Company.
It's Aerosmith.
I can't spend my life with this chiacchierone, watch him steal the buffet pastries. Madonna, a voice inside me says, hey, you gotta whack him now, Tony. I don't wanna recollect, I don't wanna take a trip down memory lane, Polly, and I don't wanna remember when, 'cause every time I hang with you, you just will not STF you, and I'm worried, Paulie, and I don't want to remember when.
Yeah. All right.
Oh,
well,
that was so beautiful and succinct.
So nice.
Very good and necessary. You can hear the rest of that song at the end of the episode, so stick around. But let's get into it. This incredible episode, Remember When, that we all loved, I'm sure.
We will remember when.
Vince, let's start with you. What did you think about this episode?
You know, I didn't love this episode, but I didn't hate this episode. I enjoyed the Paulie and Tony storyline. I really enjoyed that Tony was, you know, slowly discovering that one of his childhood idols was actually sad and pathetic as a grown man. I didn't hate the Junior storyline, but it just, it felt like they did like a weird One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest like themed episode. It wasn't my favorite. I like that the guy, what was that guy's name? The
Carter Chong?
Carter Chong. I liked him as an actor. I just don't really, that storyline didn't do a ton for
Leung.
Me.
And Ken has been in Star Wars. He was in X-Men. Mm-hmm. Played Karnak in Inhumans.
He was in Keeping the Faith. Which is a fantastic movie.
I remember Keeping the Faith.
It's really fun.
My friend's dad was in it. He played the bartender.
Oh, okay.
He's also Babu Bhatt on Seinfeld. Anyways.
You know he was in Kundun?
Was he?
Yeah, it says here
Marty.
On Wiki. He's in Kundun. Hey, I liked it. Kundun.
I had no idea. Yeah. Brian George was in Kundun.
Yeah.
Man, you got some fast Googling skills,
no,
I gotta
Ken
say.
No, Ken Leung, not the guy from Seinfeld. What the hell?
I thought you meant the Bobo! Keeping the Faith. I thought you meant Babu Bhatt was in Kundun.
No,
I was like, that could
Ken
be.
Leung.
I've never seen it.
No, come on.
Well, fair enough. Dave,
yeah.
What did you think of this episode?
I also don't like this one. The one I watched for the last time I was on here was great, and this one I was like, oh boy, this is why I was like, I don't know if I want to watch this show anymore in 2007. It was really there wasn't a lot going on here, you know.
Yeah.
They invent this reason for Tony and Polly to go
have a road trip.
I think they
needed more time to explain why they were doing that, because it was a little, I don't know, like what?
It was all rushed.
Yeah.
It was like they needed a bridge episode to explain why Corrado's never going to get out of this institution. They needed to put Tony and Polly at odds and then kind of deal with the fact that Polly isn't trustworthy.
Right.
Like, we know he's not, because we know he's the one who told what's his face about the joke.
Yeah, Johnny Sack.
Johnny Sack.
Yeah.
Johnny Sack. It was just, there's not a lot that happened here. It's supposed to be like really tense when you're on the boat and Tony's looking at the hatchet and stuff, and I'm like, they're not gonna kill Polly in this episode.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah. I felt like they wanted us to be invested in this storyline about like whether Tony was going to whack Polly, or like they wanted us to be invested in like the mafia implications of this relationship. And I was just more interested in the interpersonal implications of this relationship. Like I just enjoy the fact that, you know, Tony's slowly discovering that this guy that he's idolized since childhood is this like sad, pathetic dipshit. and that whole part I loved, but yeah, like the part where they were sort of making it seem like Tony might whack the guy. Whatever.
So you're saying it wasn't effective, like you knew it wasn't going to happen and you were kind of like, this isn't really what I came here for.
It wasn't like the part of the show that I was invested in. And if they were going to try and sell that, I don't think they set it up well enough.
Mm. Like, yeah, I mean, I feel differently about it because I understand art.
Okay.
So so what you guys don't understand about at least the Junior storyline is an art is happening. To me, I love the Junior storyline because again, like this entire season is kind of one long denouement, like disguise.
Hold on, what is how would you translate denouement?
That's like kind of like the at the end of a story. Once you reach the climax, it's kind of like the like an epilogue.
The part where it's boring,
boring, and they're just kind of like all the words before the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's disguised as like, it's the final exciting climax of The Sopranos. And I think, as we all know, anyone who's actually watched the show knows that this last season isn't really a climax. It is more kind of an anticlimax. It's like a 9-episode long denouement. And so for me, I look at this as this is the episode where they, for all intents and purposes, kill off Junior. Because it wraps up the Junior storyline in kind of an interesting way, in my opinion, because you see him now in this, you know, court-ordered psych ward, and he is kind of just up to, he's back doing all of the, like, mafia stuff that he liked to do without, you know, kind of, I mean, but without really having any money to do it. So he's still got a grift going on while he's
collecting
there.
Buttons and candy. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like my grandpa.
Yeah. I mean, it is, it's kind of cute. And you see kind of like this relationship with the kid as he becomes kind of like, he is the Tony of their relationship. Yeah. He is now just replaced Tony in his mind, and maybe quite literally replaced Tony in that, like, he is also a little bit suffering from some cognitive issues.
Yeah, but they also do this thing in that storyline, which is like, you know, I feel like we've seen 15 shows do a variation on like the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest storyline, where it's like, yeah, these guys are in the mental institution because they're like, they think too freely, and the man is trying to like numb them down with their drugs and stuff, and trying to get them to conform. And it's like, I don't know, the way they played that, they played it much more conventionally cliche than The Sopranos generally does. And there was like good parts within that. Like I, mm-hmm. you know, I did like the guy turning on him at the end,
yes,
because, you know, they're all criminally insane. That's why they're there. But
also there's, I think, some you know, as Matt said, some art in this. It's real.
Yeah, hell yeah.
In the sense that what we're really dealing with is, to piggyback on what you're saying about him, Carter being Tony, is that you're seeing kind of what the arc of a mafia life is in this very short period of time.
Mm.
You're seduced by the power. You get off on the fact that you can kind of swagger around and beat the shit out of people whenever you want and take what you want. Mm-hmm. And then you realize that you are actually not in control. That the system is in control of you. The mafia, or, you know, the law, or whatever it is, family unit. And so when he snaps, he's snapping because he realizes, one, that he'll always be controlled by something, if it's the system or whatever. But also that he wants to be the top guy now, which is what happens in the mafia. It's like, okay, you're the boss. Well, what if I was the boss? And it's really kill or be killed.
He did the thing that all these, you know, mafia fucking vultures do in this show, which is like any little bit of weakness they see, they kind of latch onto and then psychopathically do a violence.
They're seduced by the power. And then when they see like a chink in that armor, suddenly they're like repulsed by it because it sort of reminds them of their own powerlessness. So
they
react strongly.
And they want to be like, I would never do that.
Right.
And the only way that they can...
Phil Leotardo crying at his daughter, no, Johnny Sack crying at his daughter's wedding. Unbelievable.
Right, yeah. And meanwhile, Phil Leotardo then later goes on to cry in the hospital bed while Tony is telling him to like take care of his family and shit. Like, they're all hypocrites. And kind of this...
Italians pretending that they don't cry is very hilarious.
I know. Of all of the European ethnic groups that cry, it is Italians love to cry.
Yeah.
It's the favorite thing to do.
All of their art is crying and shouting and singing. Come on.
Exactly. Crying and eating at the same time. So let's get into the Junior storyline first, and then we'll go into the Tony and Paulie storyline. So with the Junior storyline, we start out with Uncle Pat. The return of Uncle Pat and some other old guy who I don't know are visiting.
I didn't fully remember who those guys were, but
well, Uncle Pat is the one. He's the guy. He owns a farm somewhere.
Sure.
Beppy Sherbo or whatever. Have you?
Is that his name? Beppy? Is he Beppy?
Beppy. He's Beppy. Oh, he's Beppy. Buca de Beppy.
Little Beppy. So he's there and they are, hanging out with Junior, and trying to convince him, of a plot to basically get, to bust out of prison. And Junior is, it's unclear whether or not he's like uninterested or if it's he's just
a,
in such.
It's just a dumb idea. Like, it's not like he's, it's not like he's in a maximum security prison this whole time. He just knows that if he busts out, they're just going to catch him again.
Right. But in this moment, it feels like when they are pitching it to him, he's either disinterested or he's in such cognitive decline that he is not fully able to pay attention. And I have a clip of their exchange.
What do you hear from my nephew?
Tony? They sent me a card for my birthday.
I'm still waiting for an apology. Tell him.
All right.
Which one of you is going to tell him?
We'll figure it out, Junior. If you made an appointment with an outside dentist, he'd sneak you up in our car.
Dinner, 10 minutes.
So what do you think, Junior?
Enchiladas tonight.
There's something about Junior being in this, like, psych ward, being like, yeah, he's being punished, but he's also being fully taken care of. In this, like, in a medical facility with 3 square meals a day in his own room, you know?
He gets to watch his antique shows.
He gets television. He's got board games. Like, there's something about seeing him in this where you realize, oh, fuck, he should have just been at fucking Green Grove this whole time. Mm. So much grief could have been avoided if he had just been put in a nursing home years ago.
But and, all he talks about is how much he wants to leave. So, of course, that wasn't going to happen without a court order.
But it's funny because it's another example of just, like, you know, being full of shit, right? Like, you know, he's like, oh, I got to get out of here. But, like, really, at the end of the day, he's got everything he's ever wanted, which is, like, a nice little TV.
You got enchiladas tonight?
Yeah, he's got enchiladas tonight.
It's also a matter of where's he going to go now? Like,
he
alienated anyone who might be inclined to still take care of him. Like, he kind of needs this at this point.
Yeah, it's true. But also, he feels like a big shot in there, you know? And that's really, at the end of the day, isn't that what all of these guys want? They just want to feel like a big shot wherever they're at. Like, if you're trying to be the number one mafioso in New Jersey, it's not like you're, I mean, you don't have aspirations to be. It's not like I'm the head of the Gambino fucking crime family. It's the head of the fucking New Jersey mafia. It's not a ambitious mafia.
There's a patheticness to all of the Sopranos characters, which is, I think, why people love the show so much.
Yes.
They're not cool. There's nothing suave or slick about them. And I hate to bring up the movie, but I'm going to bring it up.
Do it.
That's the worst part. Is like, okay, now they're just, all these guys supposed to be cool? Like, I'm supposed to think Dickie Moltisanti is awesome?
Right.
Like, no, he's in the Jersey crime family. Like, come on, this guy's not cool.
Yeah, like, they sort of, they made that whole movie with, like, the child perspective of Tony Soprano. And that's, like, the child who, in this episode, is, like, talking about how he once idolized Paulie and thought he was, like, the coolest guy in the world. And they sort of, they gave us that perspective in The Many Saints of Newark. Instead, it would have been so much more interesting to, like, go back and see, like, what Tony saw as a kid, but with the perspective we know now, which is that, you know, Paulie's kind of a loser. And
Exactly. So the audience being able to see for themselves what was actually going on.
Yeah.
And for Tony to be able to interpret it whatever way he wanted. But, yeah, it's that's... It's a great movie. Everyone should see it.
still on HBO Max.
So Junior is planning a poker game with the help of a black caregiver. And this is obviously the continuing theme in The Sopranos of kind of weirdly written black characters.
Dude calls Junior the N-word at one point. I was like, oh no wonder people thought they could get away with this.
I think we've said this
Italians
before.
Are the blacks of Europe, okay?
It's like the specificity of the white characters, like, it's very granular. Like, you get so many different, like, shades and
so many shades of different white ethnics, and like then, you know Jews and Italians and Northern Italians, Southern Italians. And then the black characters.
The black people are like, well, I saw some black people on TV once, and I'm going to write that here.
I have a clip.
$60. The sodas and fucking candy? Caffeinated sodas and sugar. You know some of them ain't allowed this shit. Gets them all around. I could lose my job.
fucking stick-up artist. I already gave you my watch.
Don't count my money, nigga. You making 500% of these motherfuckers.
He's swearing an awful lot for an orderly. it's an interesting choice once again. Junior is like kind of, he's held captive a little bit by this caregiver who is like, their deal is that he kind of looks the other way and helps him out with these poker games. And in exchange, he signs autographs and sells autographs of Junior Soprano on eBay.
Yeah.
Which,
and again, we talked about this last episode when we had the whole like mafia segment on TV that we're watching.
Yeah, there was a TV where the Sopranos, a new segment with Geraldo. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like I feel like the writers thought that because The Sopranos was like, you know, such a popular show at this point, that we would want there to be like a meta aspect to that where The Sopranos right. were famous in their own time, which I don't think is true to this world at all, really.
Yeah, because The Sopranos wasn't on TV in this world.
It wasn't? Yeah. What did they watch on Sunday night?
They only watched John from Cincinnati.
Well, they watched
there was five full seasons. Yes, they watched Curb. That's
Curb,
right.
And Junior thought that Larry David was him. So
yeah, but yeah, like it's strange because it's just like, maybe you could get some people to buy some like signed, like photos of John Gotti, maybe, and John Gotti though, the only famous
mafioso in the last 20 years. What was the mob guy that got killed by the QAnon dude?
Don't even know. Staten Island?
Like,
no what, idea.
Before he got killed by a QAnon guy, would you have been like, hey, I'm gonna buy this guy's autograph on eBay?
No. Yeah, that's it. Like, it's a little strange. I mean, but I guess they were just like, we know about eBay. I don't know what they were doing with that storyline. So the arch nemesis of Junior and the kid is this professor who keeps showing up to make Junior feel bad about, you know, I guess running a poker game.
Dr. Jordan Peterson. That is who this man is. He kept rambling about eating raw steaks. It was weird.
It just goes in there and just, you missed our chess match. I was going to tell you about. Wait, no. What is his voice? It's Kermit.
It kind of sounds like Kermit the Frog. Oh.
There we go.
We like to play checkers, the thinking man's game.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. He's definitely, once again, representing another thing in The Sopranos that they like to poke fun of, which is kind of this ivory tower academic elite dickheads. And I did sort of enjoy him beating the shit out of the professor. I thought it was worth it for the scene where Junior fights him, and I very much enjoyed that. I have a quick clip of that.
Checkers, the thinking man's game.
You're looking for a smack in the fucking mouth?
You don't intimidate me.
Corrado.
You're lucky she's here, you little prick.
Naturally. You're only tough when there's an authority figure nearby so things don't go too far. Oh, how the mighty have fought.
Corrado! Get him!
I just...
Oh, how mighty have fallen. You remind me of King Lear. Have you read that Shakespeare play? You numbskull, you Neanderthal.
I mean, I understand what they're doing, because they've done this like throughout the show, which is that like for Italians and Jews and a lot of like the non-Protestant whites, like there's this thing where the ladder of success is like more geared towards like intellectualism. Like their like their goal is to be sort of like an intellectual, like a cultured person, more so than like the Protestant work ethic where you just work hard and become rich or whatever. So like the mafia is this sort of vulgar version of like, no matter how much money they get, they're never gonna be like whatever that guy who made fun of Tony Shotgun.
Right. Dr. Fagoli.
Yeah, the Fagaccinis or whatever their name
were. That also, you know, I think brings up something that Sopranos was really good at during a time when everyone was trying to be satirical about the dumbing down of America.
Yeah.
The Sopranos was like, yeah, that's 100% true, and we're gonna show this
mm-hmm.
in a way that's not like, oh, this is about now. It wasn't it wasn't like on the nose. It was these characters, people we liked that were successful financially, but were not educated and dumb and selfish mm-hmm. and rude to each other and duplicitous and actively, you know, like hostile towards intelligence or sophistication or curiosity.
Right, like violently hostile.
I think, yeah. I think
somebody gets in my face and so I'm going to kick him in the nuts and then just wail on him for a while. Like that is the level of discourse. And that's the world that we live in today.
Yeah. And I think the Sopranos was good at, you know, like in the aughts, like you said, it was like George W. Bush culture. Like it was the main parodies.
Junior sends a letter to Cheney.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like about shooting his friend in the face.
We were all sort of horrified. We were also sort of horrified by the dumbing down of culture, rightly so, because you know, like Idiocracy, that was the thing. Everything was like extreme marketing, but they sort of anticipated the fact that the like the flip side of that, like what we were going towards, like more towards like the neoliberalism of like the 20 teens, that they anticipated the fact that that was just as obnoxious as a dumbed down culture, and not many things that came out around this time, I think, had this level of satire. Right.
Yeah. They definitely like they didn't set up your kind of like neoliberal intellectuals as the heroes. Right. In fact, they're all villains as well. The academics in the show, the doctors in the show are all villains. Like every professional managerial class person is also a piece of shit, just in a different way.
Like AJ is bad, but like the like solution to that is not to have a bunch of Meadows running around because they're just full shit, basically.
Yeah. Because then you end up with a Janice, and Janice is the worst of both worlds.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I still love Janice.
Oh, I mean, she's amazing.
I had a huge crush on her.
Oh, she's fantastic. She's maybe the best character in television history.
Absolutely.
But you mentioned a scene that I really loved, which was was Junior dictating a letter to the kid to Dick Cheney, and I have a clip of that.
Respectfully, Corrado Soprano. Read it back.
Dear Vice President Cheney, as a powerful man all too familiar with accidental gunplay, I am writing in the hope that you will intervene in my case. Like yourself, I was involved in an unfortunate incident when a gun I was handling misfired.
I love the idea that he's writing a letter to Cheney and he's like, if there's any man in the world who will pardon me for something, the relatable crime of accidentally shooting someone close to you, it'll be Dick Cheney. And he could be right. But maybe he would have let him off.
I think that's the satire of dumbed down culture that we would expect in 2007. Yes. But then The Sopranos had another level where there's an intellectual who's also an annoying piece of shit.
Yeah, for sure. And we haven't talked much about the kid, Carter. You guys seem to have mixed feelings on this character. I very much enjoyed him, not only because I think that actor is just like really good, like the performance is good, but I really did like the fact that he's kind of the point of this character is that he is going to wrap up the Tony and Junior arc. Like he is going to vicariously be Tony in like in terms of like Tony's revenge. He's also going to be Tony in terms of like Junior finally apologizing to him. He tells the story early on where Junior is talking about, you know, one time he didn't accept money and his dad made him walk, you know, 15 miles in the rain or whatever the fuck. And then the kid tells him his own story about his own father, which I have a clip of.
Once in third grade, I got a 96 on my spelling test, highest mark in the class. I was so proud. I brought it home to show my dad. What happened to the other 4 points, he says. Fuck you! Fuck you!
I mean, that's It's a great story. Yeah. I think we can all agree on that.
His dad was right. Where are those 4 points, you fucking pussy?
Yeah, like, first of all, yeah.
He's telling Junior's...
Exactly.
He's telling Junior's story in a way that he hasn't learned to, like, mythologize the past. He's just like, no, that was bad, and it sucked.
Right. He's pure just anger and resentment. Like, yeah. His story isn't... there's no greater purpose or moral yet. He hasn't learned to... reshape the narrative to make it into like some noble thing. It's just about how much he hates his dad, and
yeah, which is the opposite of what Polly's doing in the other story, which is yes. Oh, everything was great. Remember when we did that thing and we had sex with those hoo-was?
Yes. Those hillbilly hoo-was.
They were 16, by the way.
Right, I know.
I was like, all right, this plays differently now.
It does. I mean, I guess we always knew they were bad people, but yeesh. Yeah.
Well, he didn't say how old they were, did he?
Yeah, didn't he say 16-year-old?
No, but...
No, how him. Old he was and Tony was at the time.
Yeah.
Adults. Yeah.
They're adults.
I assume they're adults. I mean, for sure he was. Tony, maybe not. But anyways...
Summertime and the living... is thirsty, at least it is in the Lieb household. And when we are trying to get hydrated, we reach for the best water on earth, Fiji water.
Fiji water is bottled at the source and untouched by man until you unscrew the cap. Fiji water really is from the islands of Fiji, 1,600 miles from the nearest continent. And it is sourced from an ancient artesian aquifer and is naturally preserved from external elements.
That's right, Vince. You can literally taste the difference. So whenever we do an ad, we sometimes get samples sent to us of whatever we're advertising. And when I first got sent Fiji water bottles in the mail, I thought it was hilarious. I was like, I've tasted water before. Why would they do this? But believe me when I say... this is absolutely the best water I've ever tasted. And that's because Fiji water is a natural artesian water with 100% natural electrolytes. Unlike some other top premium bottled water brands, Fiji water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring.
That's right, Matt. Fiji water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving it its signature smooth, soft taste. Fiji water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the US, and it has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH.
Also, Fiji water's 330 milliliter and 500 milliliter bottles are made from using 100% recycled plastic. Fiji water continues to lead the top premium bottled water competition on launching 100% recycled plastic bottles. The aquifer Fiji water originates from is a sustainable source and will continue to replenish as the rain and water cycle persists in the islands of Fiji.
So get stocked up on Fiji water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick some up today for your next backyard party, beach or pool day, hike, or even your home office. It's not just water.
It's Fiji water. Hey everyone, Matt Lieb here. If you know me, you know there's only two things in this entire world I care about more than rewatching my favorite TV shows. It's gut health and former karate champion Chuck Norris. That's why I love Morning Kick. You're probably asking, what is Morning Kick? Well, I'll tell you. It's a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Look, I live in Los Angeles, all right? And this is a city defined by its culture of people drinking green drinks. Unlike the other green drinks out there, this one actually tastes good. It tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade. It's so good. And since I started drinking Morning Kick, my digestion is smoother and my body looks leaner. And I have energy all day. All day energy, which I need because I have a child and she's walking now, which means she's running now, which means I need energy. The thing I like most about Morning Kick is how easy it is to make. Just mix with water and stir. Simple. No blenders, no convection ovens, no turning your pantry into a science lab in order to make a SCOBY so you can brew your own probiotic drink. No. All you need to do is have some water and get yourself some Morning Kick, stir it in a glass, And baby, that digestion of yours, smooth, smooth like silk. And you're going to look good and you're going to feel good. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/podyourself for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/podyourself today. All right, let's get back to the show.
So later on, after Junior has like decided he has to take some medication to stop himself from pissing himself, and it kind of like it numbs him out, and the kid kind of devises a plan in order to get him to chuck his medication by like creating a diversion. And he goes with it at first, but then of course he gets into this fight with the professor. And they realize, oh, this medication that is supposed to curb you pissing yourself and also curb your violent outbursts isn't working because clearly you're not taking it.
Turns out it also curbs your enthusiasm, you know?
So he ends up deciding to not do this thing anymore. In fact, like he does the distraction, but then Junior just takes the medication anywhere, and he says, I did the thing, which let me just play that clip.
What'd you do that for?
I should piss myself again.
But I did the thing.
I love that.
His performance is very good, and it is very affecting. And that little monologue he had about his dad is great, because this is a show about how your parents are bad people.
It's about how your parents fuck you up, and to me, that's the entire point of this character. Is there comes to this scene in which now the kid is depressed. And he's like lying in bed, and Junior hasn't seen him in a while because he's sitting around depressed. And they have this conversation that I think is really telling.
Hootie and the Blowfish.
Thanks.
That was a nice letter you wrote to Chenny. But he don't read them himself. They got computers that do it. I asked Lynch, the professor. He says we'll have a better chance if we write him at his outfit, Halliburton.
My father owned Grumman stock. My grandpa said my dad liked character. Grandpa was a lion.
You're very smart, Anthony. I'm sure you're very good with spelling, too.
See, to me, this scene right here is as close as Junior is going to get in this series of apologizing to Tony and telling him that actually you do have the makings of a varsity athlete. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like the spelling thing, he calls him Anthony. This is them wrapping up in that scene, kind of like Junior's apologizing in a way. He's offering this beautiful gift of Hootie and the Blowfish. And he's telling him he's a good speller.
But he's also completely whacked out of his mind on medication. So it's how much of this is really what he would do if he was of sound mind and body? And how much is it? But I think that's part of the tragedy of it, is you don't really know. And, you know, in their final scene together in the last episode, there's a lot of emotion and kind of sadness there. But it's not this. You know, it's not the thing that I think Tony ultimately wanted from him.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, agreed. It's that scene is the wrapping up of the whole thing, but it's almost again like this like an epilogue. But in terms of this episode, this scene I feel is Junior finally doing a mea culpa to Tony in his drugged out state of mind.
Yeah, because he can't do it consciously. Consciously, he's like, I'm still waiting for an apology. You tell him that.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. When he's of sound mind, which, by the way, his of sound mind is being a psychopath. So right. I almost feel like, you know, why would they ever be of sound mind? So the final scene, or technically the second to last scene, with Junior and the kid, is Junior is now completely numbed out, and he is sitting around singing Country Roads with all of the other Jadrules, and the kid just starts doing his misbehaving thing. He's throwing up wadded up pieces of paper and stuff, like just doing the juvenile stuff that maybe Junior would have done had he not been totally numbed out. And Junior shushes him, and then this happens.
Country road, take me home to the place I belong, West Virginia, mountain mama.
Beats the living shit out of him. West Virginia,
take me home. Country road,
Hell yeah, you heard that shit.
Ba-ba-da-ba-da.
That was a little remix. anyways. Beats the living crap out of him. You see his glasses on the floor, and you know, oh shit, this is gonna cause some serious damage. And of course, the last shot you get of Junior in this episode is him outside, in a wheelchair, like completely bruised up, taped up glasses, just petting a cat like a Jadrool. And he is he's clearly now, his brain is no worky good no more. And it's tragic, but this is in a way it was that was the kid acting as Tony, doing the thing Tony wishes he could have done.
You know, you sold me on this storyline a little more than I initially was. I'll say that.
Yeah, although you get the art now.
I still think they could have done it without the they're trying to numb you out. Like, don't take your meds. Like, that's such an old storyline that. Feel like they could have I liked the mentor protege relationship they had going on, but yeah,
I did not need the scene where there are no characters from the show in the scene. It's the head of the facility, caregiver, and then the lady, and they're like, oh, what should we do? Oh, what if we did this? And this black person is lying. Like, I didn't need that scene.
I didn't need
to see it. Just tell me what happened. Like, it was such a
And we
waste
have the woman who's like a human sight gag as the overseer.
Yes, just like a more ratchet Nurse Ratchet.
Yeah.
And
I think my problem was really the other story is the problem for me in this more than this one.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Well, let's get in.
They don't mesh together.
Yeah. Well, let's get into that. That storyline, we start off with Polly, it opens with actually what I think is an amazing sight gag. It's like wakes up.
Sorry, I guess I feel like it's the other storyline. I guess I'm more inclined to that one just because it has the characters from The Sopranos in it. And because there's this whole digression in this episode, I feel like they failed to fill out some of the parts of this other storyline that should have been there. But weren't, and I think that would have made it work, if that makes any sense.
I agree.
I see what you mean. But you know, you're wrong. Okay. One of the best episodes ever.
All right.
Tony wakes up and sighs deeply, as if he is like also tired of doing this show. And he looks out the window and sees Polly like Terminator walking to the front door, and he kind of giggles to himself, which I thought was an amazing opening, because there is just something comical about Polly, catching a candid Polly moment is got to be the funniest thing in the world.
Yeah.
This guy is, he's like this always.
Everything that was a candid Polly moment in this episode really sung for me.
Oh my God. That's why I love this episode, was the candid moments where you get to see Polly sitting and watching TV and
laughing
at the edge
of
his bed
at a sitcom.
That is just so fucking funny to me, dude. I have a clip of that. Oh wait, no, do I not? Hold on.
It's also
no, I don't have a clue.
It's also funny that they took like the heaviest heavy, like the actor who you know has the biggest rap sheet in this show, and he was just okay playing like almost a straight up clown.
Yeah,
that was yeah.
Surprising. And it's weird the amount. It's also weird the amount of range that he had for someone who is essentially like a one note character. I mean, he's written in a one dimensional way, but that one dimensional character ends up being multidimensional because you realize that like it's a very intentional single dimension. Like this is a person who wants to his image is everything, as they say in this episode. And like he is upholding his image even, you know, in his walk towards fucking Tony's house. I mean, this guy is like, he doesn't want to have multiple dimensions, but he ends up having them. Do you get what I'm saying? In that, yeah. Like he's one dimensional in his mind, but in real life we see multiple dimensions.
I kind of think he speaks to like the character, like every person has a one friend who seems like a caricature. You know, they end up being sympathetic somehow just because it's like you see the sadness behind that caricature.
Yeah, it's like Kramer and Seinfeld.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. The pathos of Michael Richards.
That's why he was so good.
Well, he won all those Golden Globes.
Yep. Pauly is downstairs. Carmela can't get the espresso machine to work. And then we learn the reason that they have to go on this road trip. And it's basically that the feds are digging up this place where Tony buried Willie Overall, who was a bookie. It was his first guy that he killed. And they're like, oh, we got to go on the run in case they pin it on me, which is seems kind of, yeah, it's kind of
needed to set that up. I don't understand how going to Miami is going to help if you have heat on you. I guess.
Right. It's like, wait, so what's the plan then? If they do blame it on you, then you can leave the country or
take a boat to Cuba? The thing about it is, oh, you're going to go to Miami, the place where Will Smith said the party in the city with the heat is on.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that is where Buenvenido a Miami.
Exactly. Like, don't go there. The heat is on.
The heat is double on there, if anything.
Stay in Delaware, bro.
Yeah. Delaware, no one will find you. So they end up leaving together. And, you know, Carmel is kind of mad. She's like, oh, you know, at our age, life is still like this. And it's just like, don't worry. There's only six more episodes, lady. So they take a road trip.
I think Pauly speaks to that part of everyone who has that friend who is annoying that you avoid. You don't want to hang out with them. They clearly want to be your friend more than you want to be their friend.
Yeah.
But then you see the hints of like pathos where they seem to genuinely care about you. And so you can't really drop them as a friend. Cause you're like, ah.
Right. Cause you know, they would jump into traffic for you.
Yeah.
And you're like, and you do like them. They are your friend, but there's someone who like, I can only take bits and pieces. Like I can only, a little bit at a time with this person,
right?
You know,
of course, Tony, you know, is also thinking about murdering him at the end of the episode.
Yeah,
I kind of like this guy, but also, what if I killed him?
I could
get away with it.
And again, to me, that was like the part of the storyline that didn't play as well. And I don't necessarily think it's a flaw. It just seemed like they didn't have time to like set up why Tony would want, because like Johnny Sack's already dead. Like, what does he give a shit if Pauly's ratting him out to Johnny Sack? Like Johnny Sack is not a thing anymore.
What he's worried about, and he talks about this with Beansy, he's worried that this entire episode, Pauly is just going up to random people and telling them their business. He's like, he's just an affable guy. Mm-hmm. And he talks too much. You know, he's fucking chiacchiarone. He's fucking bop, 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 bop.
He's a bop, bada, bop, bada, bop.
Yeah, bibbidi, bobbidi, boo. and so, like, he's worried, as a mobster would be, that like this guy, I love him to death, but he's a fucking blabbermouth.
I just think you gotta sell that a little more when you consider that like basically everyone Tony hangs out with and employs has severe personality issues that could cause bad things to happen to the mafia.
I agree with you that it was kind of a weak pretense. for like, wait, but you're going to kill him? That right, seems a little strange. I think it was, and this is something I think this final season suffers from a little bit, is knowing that everyone's expecting death. And so they're like, oh, we're going to build up the tension. Like, oh, is Tony going to kill him? Because like the only like reasonable reason to kill Polly at this moment is because, well, the series is ending and I want to see people die. And so I think they were kind of playing with people's energy. They were doing sure, like, we're going to make these things tense. And it doesn't totally hold up now because we all know what ends up happening, and it's not as climactic as we'd all like it to be.
Yeah, this is a season of television where the creators are consciously not giving you what you want.
Right.
Which is, I think, why the movie overcorrected so much and said, let's give you everything you've ever wanted. Right.
I think, yeah, but I think that's,
I like
a very,
when they're trying to edge, when they're trying to get us, they're edging us, you know? That was the better Sopranos.
Just tickle the head, baby.
Yeah.
I think it was a very conscious choice. I think it was just you know, fucking just the, it was David Chase just shoving everything in your mouth. So you fucking eat it, you fucking pig, you know, making you choke on all your fan service.
It's like the film Sallow.
Exactly.
Manja. Eat this shit, piggy.
Exactly.
I liked that this episode is trying to do something where they're combining these two stories thematically. Maybe not plot-wise, but the themes are all kind of tied up with each other and around, you know, memories and regrets and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It just doesn't hang together as two stories that deserve to be the same episode. They could have each been separate episodes. You know?
It's true, but you forget to focus on the good things that happen. We have one of the greatest cameos of all time.
Oh, Lin-Manuel Miranda is the bellboy?
Yes, and I have a clip.
I don't know.
You remember that place, the dive with the fucking massage beds?
Behaving there. We met those 16-year-old hillbilly hoolers near the taxi stand.
Hey, you want the old days? Let's go there.
Excuse me. This place, is it new?
I think maybe, I don't know.
There was a motel on this spot though, right? The Haven Air?
I don't know.
Fucking guy.
What's your name, man?
I don't know.
Fucking guy.
Yes.
Fucking guy.
I mean, just a wonderful, wonderful performance by
just
a young
Lin-Manuel. Just all of his potential in miniature right there. Like, you could see.
I don't know.
I think maybe. I don't know.
You could see everything he would become in that one role.
I mean, maybe his best acting role of all time. I mean, let's be real. Fantastic work.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. But, yeah.
By the way, we haven't said it yet, but a hearty RIP to the actor who played Beansy, who died.
That's right.
Just six days ago, I think.
Yeah.
Paul Herman.
That's right. Yeah.
He was Whispers de Tullio in The Irishman.
Right.
He was in
Paul
Silver
Herman? Is that his name?
Silver Linings Playbook. Yeah, Paul Herman.
Well, RIP. Wasn't he also in fucking like Goodfellas?
He was in Goodfellas. He was the Pittsburgh connection in Goodfellas.
That's right. R.I.P. to Beansy. And this is our final Beansy storyline of the series.
Yeah. Surprisingly, he's doing good. Like, paraplegism agrees with him. Paraplegic life.
Yeah, he is. He's now living in Miami, Buenvenido a Miami. And he's a paraplegic. He shits in a bag. To which Polly says, kill me now, which mean. And he also at one point calls him a stand-up guy and then says sorry, which...
Right. I didn't even get the joke at first, and I was like,
I didn't either.
Yeah.
I was like, as soon as you said sorry, I was like, oh, I get the joke. You didn't need to say sorry. You've made it meaner by saying sorry. We get to see Beansy and Polly doing a lot of remembering when. That is kind of like that's Polly's thing to do. And then we get that scene where the thing happens, in which we took our audio for our segment. And here's that scene for everybody.
And Tom, remember when we all rented that house down the shore with the bed bugs?
Summer of 78.
Place up the beach. Yeah. Sonny Spence from the Bronx rented it. Huh?
That's where that hippie kid mysteriously drowned during that party.
Hey, Tom. You okay?
Yeah, yeah. You sure do. You're being kind of quiet.
Well, that's because, remember when is the lowest form of conversation.
Whew. That's the line.
Hey, he said it.
I just don't know if that's really true for him.
No.
Yeah.
Tony lives in the past.
Exactly. Yeah.
I guess the hypocrisy is the point, yeah?
Yeah, and also I think a pretense for, you know, I think with him it's not that remember when is the lowest form of conversation. I think it's, you know, Polly mentions a hippie kid mysteriously disappearing, and he's like low key, he's like dry snitching about a murder that they did. And so I think Tony is just like, this guy needs to stop fucking talking. Yeah. And I understand that in some level. He's like, things are going well. And, you know, I'm worried that I have this fucking loose cannon, this fucking loose lip sinking ships. And I don't know what to do about it. You know, he's getting paranoid. And he has a conversation with Beansy about it. And Beansy tells him Paulie's a stand-up guy. And it ends with him going, but has he really been put to the test? Which I think the answer is yes.
Yeah, didn't Paulie's he go to, like 60 years old?
He's 60 years old. He's been to prison before for like shit. He's never snitched before. It just seems like he wouldn't.
Yeah.
Like, he might accidentally dry snitch, but I don't think he would snitch.
Yeah. Feels like they're grasping for straws a little bit there. Yeah,
I think so, too.
This is an episode in search of a story.
Yeah. A little bit. It all works out in terms of the Willie overall thing. Syl gives him a call and says, Jackie Aprile's taking the heat for it. And he checks on Polly to see him sitting alone laughing hysterically at an episode of Three's Company. And then Tony suggests that Polly and he go sport fishing on a boat, and he is scared. And then we have the boat scene that is relatively tension filled, depending
by the way,
on who you are.
Two mafia guys from New Jersey go sport fishing, and they're gonna like rig and pack all of their own fishing equipment. I don't buy it. There's no fishing guide that's gonna do all that stuff for them.
I mean, I imagine that, you know, they rented it all, or I don't know, man. You know, it didn't even look like they started fishing. They were just kind of sitting there.
Yeah, there was no fishing to be had. Polly made him some rigatoni a la Polly.
Yeah.
Rigatoni a la Tony, depending on your
rigatoni a la Tony.
And yeah. Then he had some beer and menacingly stared at a hatchet for a while. But he cackles and laughs at him and like is trying to intimidate him in such a strange way.
It is a strange scene filled with tension. It also, in the way it's shot,
he hit him with a beer in the stomach. That's
right.
That.
Yeah.
He chooses to hit him with the beer in the stomach rather than murder him. He was like, maybe I just want to hit this guy, which, fair, that's growth, actually, for Tony. Like,
moderation, Tony. Moderation.
Yeah, he's like, I don't have to kill him, but I could just hurt him a little bit and scare him. And the way it's shot, there's this like floating thing, this seasickness that I thought was like pretty good as far as like art is concerned.
Yeah.
Like directing,
they really
art.
Made you feel like the boat go up and down because they
yeah,
made camera go up and down.
It's like it was
camera
on the boat.
Yeah, camera on boat, and it felt real. Basically, Tony is trying to get him to admit that he told the joke to Johnny Sack, and he doesn't admit it, which I think alone is putting him to the test, right? Isn't
yeah,
that like
that, well, because that's a funny thing. Like, is the test like that he can get Polly to be honest with him, or is the test to see if Polly can keep a secret even when it's obvious that he is lying?
Right. Yeah, and I do think that was the test at the end of the day. If he had said, "Yeah, I said it," then he would have been like, "Well, now I have reason to kill you, not just because you know caused a big you know, fucking kerfuffle with that, but also because you caved. I pressured you a little bit. I brought you out on a boat and you still fucking, you caved. You
one
know?
Boat ride and you're spilling the beans? Come on.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it was a real test. I think he just wanted to torture the man.
Yeah. I think he's a sadist at heart, likely.
And he wanted to tool with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think
he was
mostly
just annoyed by what an annoying person he was, and he wanted to be for a while.
He makes fun of his laugh, which I thought was particularly a low blow. I have a little bit of that.
He was a funny prick, that Ruff. Gladiator fixation. I'm here, Georgie in the eye with the chain.
That was a good joke when he hit Georgie in the eye with the chain. Yeah.
Funniest thing he ever did.
I'd have loved to seen John's face when he heard that crack. Oh, he's fucking holier than now because he didn't fuck other women. It's the broomstick up his ass. No offense, but you ever had yourself checked for Tourette's? What? Tourette's syndrome. Hey, hey, hey. You gotta take yourself. I don't know. When I'm nervous, tense or something.
It's like so mean.
Yeah.
It's extra mean.
What are you, dumb in the brain? What are you stupid?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, you ever noticed that you sound retarded? It's like, wow, he's your friend.
Yeah. Have you ever gone to the doctor and gotten checked for being annoying?
Yeah.
But I think that's what this is the mafia mentality. And it does kind of live comfortably next to the other storyline when it is about power dynamics, right? Who's on top,
right.
Who's on the bottom, who gets to throw the shit and who has to eat it.
Right.
And in this moment, Paulie's got to eat the shit.
That's ninja. That's a very chimp-like metaphor. I like that. Who gets to throw the shit and who has to eat the shit? I like
exactly.
That. Deep down inside, you know, we're all just monkeys.
We're all just monkeys throwing, you know, trying to be king of the mountain.
Some of
so
the monkeys are throwing
the
shit, and the other monkeys on the
they
bottom.
They gotta eat them.
They're eating. They're eating
they
all
eat
of them.
The poo-poo.
Who's the top monkey? It's gotta be Amy from the movie Congo. Best monkey. Right, Tone?
Gorilla, bad. Gorilla, bad. Go away. I'm sorry, that was Congo.
She can't sign when she's got the shit in her hands. It's the only time she shuts up.
She got the doo-doo in the hand. He doesn't kill him. Paulie has a dream sequence in which Pussy is there and he's like cooking a thing and he's like, when my time comes, will I stand up? And then he wakes up and lifts weights. This storyline ends with Tony is back at home in his robe and Paulie has sent Carm a $2,000 espresso machine. And like, you know, she complains kind of about it. And he says something like, it's people like him are the reason that we can live our lifestyle. So it's
because of those apes down there eating the shit, the reason that we're on top of the mountain throwing the shit.
I want to point out one thing before we stop talking about this episode that we kind of glossed over, which is the scene where Paulie Walnuts is packing to go to Miami. And he pulls out pair after pair after pair of these white shoes. These, like, old man white loafers. It was so funny to me.
I'd never noticed that Paulie was into white loafers before this episode.
But he's like...
He's really into them.
Yeah. He loves them. And I think that's an example of, you know, Paulie has been trying to be... the same guy his entire life. You know, he's like, he's got an outfit. He's like, it's me, Paulie, the cartoon character.
Right.
You know, like he is trying to be, he's like the Simpsons. At the end of every episode, it's like nothing happened previously.
Right.
And he just goes on, you know, and that's what he wants. Instead, like life gets in the way and he finds out his aunt is his mother and his mother is his aunt and all this shit and worrying about cancer and all that. But like he just wants to be a guy with the same loafers, a guy who has a nice little apartment. He sits around, he watches Three's Company. He laughs on the edge of a bed. That's all he's ever wanted. And to be a cool, cool gangster image. And you know. God bless him. We need more like him. Yeah, so the only other storyline is a little bit more Phil. New York, Phil and Doc are eating at an Italian restaurant. Doc takes the food off of Phil's plate, and Phil's like, I'm going to kill you. And then they kill Doc Santoro and cements his position, you know, as head Beansy. Of the
Wait, Brooklyn no, who killed family. Them again?
Phil did. Phil Leotardo.
Oh.
Yeah.
Who's the other guy? That they
Doc
showed
Santoro.
Doc Santoro. No, but that's the Doc Santoro was the dead guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There was another the guy who has like the weird salivary issue that they showed at the end of the set. He kind of looks like Beansy, but he's not Beansy.
Oh, I don't remember.
Okay, sorry.
Someone will know.
Yeah.
Not me. Fuck that. But but yeah, so no more Doc Santoro. He gets shot in the eye. He gets the Mo Green treatment. And yeah, that's the episode. Do we have a favorite scene, least favorite scene, or something we forgot to mention, Vince?
I think we mentioned a little bit, but yeah, my favorite was Polly laughing at the sitcom. That really gave me a good belly laugh with that one. And then my least favorite, of course, the orderly selling eBay pictures of Junior.
Yeah. What about you, Dave?
My least favorite was the entire poker scene. Because it's just really weirdly scripted and shot to where you feel like you don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
It
makes you feel insane.
Yeah, it's a surreality to it. It's not fun to sit through and try to figure out where your bearings are. My favorite scene is absolutely when that fucking doctor, Professor Jordan Peterson, gets wailed on. Checkers, the thinking man's game.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen. Oh, no!
my nuts.
Oh, the consequences of my actions. Yeah, I love that
man
too.
Sort of deal.
Yeah,
yeah. I was saying, Burns. So yeah. I think. Yeah, my least favorite is definitely like the eBay pictures. And I think my favorite scene is that scene that you hated, Dave. The one where none of them are Sopranos characters and the doctors are sitting around, mostly because they once again had a black character and decided to have him say, is it because I'm black? Which, man, Sopranos.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Racially it's like, problematic from the jump, and then the movie did not help any.
No, it did not. but I have a clip of that.
Is he generally a troublemaker?
Nah, he cool. Just got now to talk to him is all.
That's a lovely watch you're wearing. Is that vintage? It must have been quite expensive.
Why am I the only caregiver being interrogated here? It wouldn't happen to be because of the color of my skin now, would it?
Thank you for your cooperation. You can go.
Oh, Sopranos.
I hate that scene so much. Oh my
God. It's so terrible.
Yeah,
not
great.
Oh, man. But, yeah, real quick, we learned a new word today, the gabavafangul, kiakaron, which is loudmouth.
It's got a bit of a onomatopoeia. It's a good word.
It's a good word. I enjoy it. I use it in the song. And yeah, if I had to rate this episode with a letter grade, I loved it. I'm giving it a B+. Vince.
Yeah, I think, like you said, not the greatest. Still holds up for what it is. In total, solid B+.
All right, Dave.
Yeah, I didn't like it at all, really. I mean, there were parts of it that I enjoyed. I enjoyed the guy getting beat up. Not my favorite Sopranos episode of all time, and indicative of a lot of the problems of season 6 of the show. So I'm going to give it a B+.
All right, B+, fair grades
Bold.
All around.
Bold.
Solid B+ episode of The Sopranos, and a solid A+ episode of Pod Yourself a Gun. Dave Schilling, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast with us.
Thank me. Yeah, absolutely.
Where can people find you on the street?
Well, not on the street, hopefully. I don't want to get kicked in the nuts like Professor Brian Lynch.
Oh,
my nuts.
Ow!
You can find me on Twitter at Dave_Schilling. And you can read my style column in the LA Times every
Wow, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. News.
Fancy guy. Oh, God. I almost forgot. I was at a Giorgio Armani Oscars party. And who was there? Michael Gandolfini.
No way. Oh, did you say what's up to him?
Okay, so my friend who was there, she is a huge Sopranos fan.
Yeah.
And she's like, I got to talk to him. I wonder if I could sleep with him. And I was like, I don't know. He's like 22. And she's like, no, he's not that young. He's 22. He seemed really uncomfortable. I think he was there with another son right. Another from The Sopranos, because he's there with a very ruddy looking Sicilian man with a huge head of hair. And I'm like, is that, that's got to be like Bacala's kid or something. Like, I don't know. One of them had a child and now they're in Hollywood
that's,
too.
That's got to be like Weston Shirupa.
Yeah, it's gotta Weston. He was behind us for a long time and I didn't notice, and then she's like, oh my god, there's Michael, Jake, Michael.
If I ever see him in real life, I'm gonna go, oh cool, a hamburger, because that's my favorite line from Many Saints.
A hamburger far out.
Oh hell yeah, hamburger. Gabagool. So read Dave Schilling's wonderful column at the LA Times and follow him on Twitter. And thanks again for coming, homie. We love you.
No problem. This was super fun.
Patreon.com/Fraudcast for all of the bonus episodes where we talk about other things like movies and shit. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. Vince, we have some fucking names this week. Can you believe it?
I cannot believe it. That's unbelievable.
Okay, so we got a few. The first is Grant Miller.
Hey, we call this guy the Horace because he's Horace Grant Miller. He's he's over there in the patrons. He's got the goggles on. He's rebounding. Gotta love old Horace.
I gotta love Horace Grant. Love it. Next is Gilbert Poor.
Hey, Poor. Is this guy a poor guy? He seems more like a rich guy. Like if I was a rich guy, yeah. We call this guy Fiddler on the Roof. That's the song.
I like it.
That's where the song comes. Yeah. All right. I haven't seen it.
Yeah. If I was a rich man, I gotcha. Next, we got Brett Ballou.
Oh, Ballou. We call this guy the Jungle Book.
That's good. Jungle Book. All right. All right. Next is Adam Gertz.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. We call this guy my leg Gertz. No, hold on. We call this guy Porno.
Why?
He owns that AdamandEve.com.
Wow.
I don't know.
You're still getting over winners. A head cold. all right, Adam and Eve. I was gonna, you could also Amco, because like Gertz like Hurts, Hurts like rent a car.
Yeah,
Amco.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
That was.
Was OJ finally, Simpson the spokesman? Was it Avis or Hurts that OJ did the ads?
I don't remember. I only know him as a murderer.
Yeah, well, you're too young.
I'm too young.
Before that, he played football. He was Nordberg.
I remember he was Nordberg, and then
Nordberg
he did murder
on the Buffalo Bills.
That's right. And I remember thinking, there's no way this guy could have done a murder. He's too hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Finally, Mike Kirshner.
Oh, we call this guy Coach K.
All right.
Cool.
I like it.
Yeah. You know.
Why not? Coach K and all of the patrons, thank you so much for your $8 donations. If you are so inclined, you can go to patreon.com/broadcast, join the $8 tier or above, and you will get your shout out. And don't worry, for those of you who have already been like, hey, where's my name? Don't worry. We'll get to all of them.
Yeah, we get to all the names. Everybody gets a terrible nickname.
Everybody gets a one. Frogcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030. By the way, when are we going to do that last mailbag episode? We got all these emails. We got all these.
That's true.
Yeah.
The last mailbag episode coming up. I think, I don't know, we should do it like fucking soon. What about next week?
When sweeps week?
When is, isn't that May?
Got me, man.
I don't know why I know that.
I've only been podcasting for 12 years.
Is there a podcast sweeps week? That'd be fun.
I hope so.
For all the mid-season replacement podcasts.
Right.
Good times. Anyways, Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
Alrighty-roo, everyone. We will have a mailbag episode coming soon, so why don't I just say right now, get your emails and questions in. Sure.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, don't stop believing.
I am wide awake, 'cause Paulie is giggling, sitting all alone and beaming, laughing at Three's company. Yeah. I can't spend my life with this chiacchierone, watch him steal the buffet pastries. Madonna, a voice inside me says, hey, you gotta whack him now, Tony. I don't wanna recollect, I don't wanna take a trip down memory lane, Polly, and I don't wanna remember when, 'cause every time I hang with you, you just will not STFU, and I'm worried, Polly, and I don't want to remember when. Yeah, bitch, this is fucking LMF, flat, flat. Fuck. Lying in my bed with that Blonsky Fooza, and I'm wondering what you're saying, wondering if you are dry snitching. So then I rent a boat and say, let's fish together. You told Johnny Sack that joke, and you must now confess, confess forever, bitch. I don't wanna reminisce, I don't wanna hear you tell that same goddamn story, and I don't want to remember when, 'cause every time we're on the road, you make the same old goddamn jokes, and I'm going crazy. No, I don't want to remember when. I don't want to talk about when I was a little kid. I just want to eat some guy, but go with you just like this. I don't wanna hear you talk about how much you liked my dad. Yeah, I used to look up to you, Polly. Now you just make me sad. Yeah, yeah. I don't wanna recollect, I don't wanna play the tape back up in my head, and I don't wanna remember when, 'cause even eating gabagol, you're always talking like a shit drool. I'm gonna kill you, Polly. No, I don't wanna remember when. I wanna reminisce, I don't wanna think about all of those stories. No, I don't wanna remember. Every time I think about you, so I get pissed off, bitch. It's sucker on my dick, lick on my nuts. Don't wanna remember when a giant meteor is heading for Earth, gonna destroy it and maybe blow some stuff up. Fuck. I don't wanna remember when, 'cause Bruce Willis up in the house with a mouth. Fuck. I got this. Yo, bitch, what up? It is your friend, L.A. Matt. He's inside an asteroid that's going blah, blah, blah. Gonna hit the Earth and make everything explode. The Earth will be shaped just like Vince Mancini's chode. Eat all the con for fun gun and the cum and the butts and the lungs and the kill all the bitches, shit on the snitches. One take.